Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by The Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone, on Twitter at Dino Game Theory. This is episode 24. You guys are going to have to keep track of this for me. I have no idea, but let's roll. And speaking of rolling, we've got a great episode this week with one of my favorite people on the planet. So I won't spoil the suspense too much, but you know, this is the first episode of, you know, the sort of the 2021-2022 season, you know, on the heels of a Super Bowl where, of course, my guy Tom Brady comes out and is now the GOAT, the unquestioned GOAT. And it's pretty incredible. I mean, you hear the haters out there talking about how, you know, the defense won it. He's, you know, you have to get to the Super Bowl and then you have to, you know, win as a team, lose as a team. But, you know, this guy who has won, you know, more Super Bowls than most great quarterbacks have even won games. It's incredible. He's doubled up any other quarterback in terms of playoff wins. He has now more career Super Bowl wins than any other franchise, including his six titles for the New England Patriots. Just an incredible, incredible deal. And to do that at 43 years old, first year on his new team is, I mean, really incredible and certainly won't ever be duplicated. As a matter of fact, I think if you scripted this and wanted to make a movie, they'd be like, come on, man, make it realistic. This is absolutely just incredible to see what he was able to do. So we may talk about that a little bit. And, you know, my guest this week is certainly not an East Coaster, so he may have some fire to throw on my Celtics or my Patriots or any of that nonsense. Also wanted to give a shout out to all of y'all who are joining us kind of for the first time or maybe the first couple of times. There's, you know, we get to keep track of these things and listenership is growing and man, that's flattering as hell, man. And I hope we're doing a great job. And honestly, if you have feedback, I really don't even care if it's negative. I actually prefer it that way. You know, that way we know we can change. Or hit me up on Twitter, man. I'm there. I'm an open book. Just drop me a note and say, hey, I would love to hear more of this or more of that, or tell me about this prospect, or, you know, whatever. You know, this particular show is going to be a lot of fun because, you know, I'm going to talk about dynasty game theory and some of the, you know, we're going to actually talk about dynasty startup draft strategy. And the person that I have on is the perfect person because I've seen him execute some amazing dynasty startup drafts where he left with the best team and the most future assets, which is really unbelievable. So I've seen him do it. I know he knows what he's talking about. And I am bringing on no other than the co-founder and CEO of The Undroppables, a dear friend of mine, Nick Yu, who you can find at 101 Chalk. Y'all know him as Chalk. We all call him Chalk. He's Chalk. Chalk, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Scott? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time coming. I mean, what, episode 24?
Finally.
So yeah, congratulations on a full season that you put in this past season, and you know, looking forward to what you got in store in 2021-2022.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the growth is really fun and really cool, and you know, your vision is kind of what drew me to The Undroppables and is what's kind of kept me here and what's really been something that's drawn a lot of other people to our team as well, you know, which we're going to get to in a moment. But, you know, I just wanted to let you kind of tell the people, you know, kind of what your vision is for The Undroppables and why, you know, why they should be paying attention and keep an eye on us for 2021, because it's really just the sort of the tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Yeah. You know, in a nutshell, I mean, I think the vision for The Undroppables is to disrupt, you know, kind of what the industry has already kind of established. I think creating a platform for unique, you know, passionate individuals who, you know, maybe don't have a particular platform or a place to kind of showcase their work, their content, connect with other creators, and collaborate. and, you know, developing, you know, like, again, just a platform for that. And then providing content, exclusive content, you know, well thought out, well researched content, you know, for everybody. But it's, you know, it still kind of has that feel of, you know, exclusivity. You're part of something that's unique and different. And, you know, what we pride ourselves on so far is being able to do this just for the passion of it, to give back to the community that has, you know, made us or given us an enjoyable hobby, allowed us to grow and connect with each other. So that's really kind of, yeah, the vision of the Indroppables. And yeah, we just want to put out really good, amazing content for people to consume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a ton of, you know, paywalls and, you know, everybody's got their hand out looking for your money in every sort of way. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Patreons, and I don't have anything against it. I really don't. I actually don't have a single thing against it, but you know, it's not what we intended to do. We didn't want to go straight to, oh, I've got 100 followers. Let's see if I can get, let's see if I get some money from these people. You know, it was more like, let's actually build something that's really true and sustainable and really, you know, tested. We wanted to test ourselves, you know, in the community, in, you know, in the sort of industry of fantasy football. And it's not easy. Let me just tell you, it's hard to get on this mic and give you something pertinent, entertaining, fun, informative. That's hard. It's not simple. It's not easy to, you know, have a team of people writing articles about fantasy football and to make it entertaining and informative and cool. And it's hard to do all the things that we're doing. It's not simple, but we want to get great at it so that we, you know, if we become worth something, that it's worth something. We're not just trying to, you know, get a quick buck or anything like that. That's not why we're in it. We're in it for the passion. We want that to, that, that to come through first and foremost. And that's the one thing that, you know, I was drawn to, because, you know, this is a hobby, right? I mean, to some degree, unless we become valuable, and then it's not. But until that point, we're just here to show what we've gotten and to share our passion. And that's what's most fun. And, you know, a lot of times if, obviously if you get paid, it's a job. And then all of a sudden you got a lot of other things to worry about and to maintain those bottom lines and all that. We all know that, you know, we all have our own jobs and, you know, our own businesses or whatever you, you know, you do, you become a slave to it. You know, it's like the old adage of running a restaurant. You know, I love food. I love entertaining. I love, you know, bringing people around. I love being in restaurants. You own a restaurant and you hate it. You know, it's like, oh, you gotta go back to that stupid place. And, you know, and it, it does, it can consume you. So, you know, at this point we're not there. We've got so much going on that, you know, I think I want to share, and at some point, maybe a little later on, you know, we can start talking about that. But I really, you know, one of the things that, you know, that you and I had together before we started the Indroppables was sort of that Spider-Man meme. We used to laugh about it all the time because, you know, I'd go to say something on a post here and there, replying to, you know, which is kind of how we cut our teeth in this business was, you know, just sort of on Twitter, you know, seeing if we were right and see if we saw it the right way. And every time we'd bump into each other saying the same shit. And, you know, it was kind of like, oh, this dude and I really, really see it the same. And, you know, what we found in our friendship is that we're different people, but that we're very, very similar mindset. And, you know, you're just, I'm not going to kiss your ass too much, but you're such a great person. I really enjoy all that. So, you know, with that said, I mean, you know, we can get into it, but I just want to share that with you.
Yeah, man. No, I think appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, like you said, going back to when we first met, I mean, how we met really was, yeah, just we'd be in those threads, you know, you'd post something or I'd, you know, be on a post or, you know, we cross paths with a similar kind of thought process or, you know, similar takes on different, you know, similar guys or different guys or whatever it was. And yeah, over time you start noticing that, hey, this guy is smart and he challenged me to think sometimes about the game differently, even though, you know, a lot of times we kind of came to the same conclusion or our processes are similar. I mean, you know, just kind of, you know, the old adage is iron sharpens iron, right? Just,
yes.
You know, someone like yourself just, you know, into the game and has a very, very intelligent process, and I'm trying to always improve mine. You know, I think we'll probably talk about it a little later is your anatomy series is, you know, something that people actually just DM me or message me about here and there, just saying, you know, they know that, you know, we work together with the Undroppables, and they'll tell me, you know, just things about the anatomy series that you've put together and how they're starting to mold their whole dynasty strategy and kind of framework, just kind of based off of that. And they're kind of creating their own bins of players. And so it's kind of, it's been great to see that. And yeah, I'm proud to know you and building this thing together with you and the guys.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's where, excuse me, man, but it's where we find players like Antonio Gibson and Gabriel Davis. You know, Gabriel Davis was a box checker except for draft capital. So you kind of look at it and go, hey, maybe the NFL missed. We believe he did. They did, you know, pushing him into, you know, round four instead of probably should have been a two or three pick there, certainly in day two there. And same thing with Antonio Gibson. He was a box checker except for this sort of production, which is a huge one, by the way. It's not like a small box not to check, but we can kind of explain it away. He was playing a different position. He was wide receiver. Why was he a wide receiver? Because he's great at catching. Well, that's kind of another huge box to check. And yeah, it's like, you know, you wanna be able to find the truly elite players that kind of come from nowhere. I mean, you know, Kenny Golladay, Chris Godwin, those are the types of guys that I was all over with Anatomy series, you know, as well. You know, they sort of were the part there. And I remember that draft, you know, that Golladay Godwin draft. And, you know, God is my witness. Actually, my brother's my witness. We were talking, you know, about Godwin and Golladay. We loved them. And, you know, I think I've got some receipts too about Godwin, but besides the point, you know, that was the John Ross sort of situation. I was like, I'm fading John Ross forever, you know, too small, you know, all those things, but he was a top 10 pick. And so sometimes we are smarter than the NFL. It's like, you know, a lot of times people ask, are you think you're smarter than, I don't necessarily think I'm smarter than them, but I sometimes can be. And certainly if you stick to a process, you can be. Speaking of process, you know, that's really what I think, you know, you and I started to play in dynasty leagues together. Excuse me. Be clearing my throat a little bit tonight. Sorry about that. But we played in dynasty leagues together. And when we first started playing, we would be sniping each other and sort of following the same, you know, pathway to victory, even though I don't think we ever really spoke about that sort of that strategy or that process in a startup. You know, we never, I don't think, talked about it. We just sort of blindly implemented the same process. Of course, Spider-Man meme inserted here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was one of those things where, yeah, you've kind of been in your drafts and I've been in mine, and kind of developed your own kind of strategy and process around it. And yeah, I know. And then you kind of start hearing about, you know, how Jax is a, you know, dino startup game theory. And, you know, I'm just like, wow, man, this is like, this is kind of what I've been doing, you know? I mean, you know, obviously there's, you know, some differences here and there. I mean, kind of different nuances, but yeah, overall, I mean, just the way we view it and, you know, the types of, even like when you're looking at the types of boxes that certain players are checking, I don't have anything in depth as like, you know, what you've done with the anatomy, but, you know, there's certain things that we're looking at, right? I mean, from an analytics perspective, you know, yeah, maybe they're not, you know, being highly valued or viewed by the NFL, so they don't receive that draft capital necessarily. But yeah, I mean, there's other things that we're looking at to make that determination. Both of us aren't necessarily ones to kind of lean on film, although, you know, I won't say I'll never kind of consider the film analysis, although I won't do the analysis myself. I'll probably lean on people that I believe are much smarter than me in that area. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think looking at startups and just drafting in general, and I mean, just team building philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say, yeah, me and you, you know, very, very much see eye to eye.
Well, so I'm going to pick your brain a little bit and kind of go through it. And, you know, I'll start from the beginning in terms of the first thing that you should do when you join a league is look at the settings. I mean, you know, I wrote an article, and it's of course up on the Undroppables. Probably, you know, you probably have to search a little bit, but it's there because it's been a while. But I wrote an article which was, you know, Dynasty Startup Draft Strategy. And, you know, I sort of outline a certain draft strategy. But important to mention, I think I do mention in the article as far as I remember, but it's important to first, even though I outline a certain strategy that works for most sort of 12-team leagues where you start, you know, 10 to 12 players and have a 30-man bench, if it's not that in a, you know, PPR, half PPR setting, if it's some sort of different thing, if it's an 8-team league where you only start 5 players, I'm not trading back. I'm trading up. I'm trading up, up, up. I'm doing everything I can to get a stud at each position. I want Kelce, Mahomes, you know, Devontae, and Kamara. That's my first 4 picks. I don't want to mess around with depth. I don't need depth. It's an 8-team league with 5 starters. It's ridiculous. So, you know, that's the first bit of dynasty game theory that you want to impart in yourself, is understanding what the scoring settings are, what the lineup settings are, and what the roster settings are, and any other significant rules that might impact player acquisition and player value, right?
Yeah, I think it's a great point, right? I think, you know, it's become almost trendy or cool to, quote-unquote, trade back, and we'll get into that, right? I mean, I think that's the basis of, you know, kind of our philosophy in terms of acquiring or accumulating value in a draft. But yeah, I mean, depending on the settings, if it's a smaller, not, you know, shallow league, yeah, you don't need a trade back. Why would you need depth when there's going to be a plethora of talent, and you want to kind of get the top guys at each kind of position. Yeah, and then when looking at scoring settings, I mean, I can almost, you know, think of so many different occasions where you're in a draft and, you know, you're going to like round 2 or something, round 3, and there's someone in the league that says, oh, wait, there's 6-point passing TDs, or
right.
What? It's 1.75 tight end premium. I thought it was just regular PPR or whatever, right? I mean, because the person obviously didn't even just check the basics, right? Or,
right.
Oh, I didn't know we had 10 starters or 12 starters or whatever. Maybe you're starting.
Right. You know, oh, there's a 100-yard bonus? I didn't know that. It's like, yeah, you got to know that shit. Like, you know.
Yeah.
That's immediate, you know, and actually most leagues, to your point, most leagues, if you join them, whether it's MFL or Sleeper, and if you're playing on other shitty platforms, you know, probably don't want to do that anymore. But if you're playing on one of those, you can actually go into the player pool before the draft and sort by 2020 stats, and it'll show you with that league scoring where players would have landed. So sometimes you'll like look and you'll be like, oh shit, like all these tight ends score way more than even Devontae Adams. Like, I'm definitely going to load up on tight ends. Obviously, if, like, you know, if Logan Thomas outscored Devontae Adams in some stupid league you're in, then don't take wide receivers. Like, that's stupid. You know, it's a dumb league, obviously, or whatever. But regardless, like, I'm going to follow that notion of where the math tells me to go. And so that's a big hack. You know, and sometimes you'll look and you'll be like, wow, all these, you know, slot receivers, because it's a, you know, there's no yardage bonus, or sometimes there's a yardage bonus. You look and you're like, wow, these deep threats are really scoring a lot more because they get a 20-point bonus if a 50-yard catch, whatever the case, you know, and you're like, that's a huge advantage. So I'm going to capitalize on that. You have to look for those things, you know, but I think you and I are talking about sort of a standard 12-team league, probably PPR. And, you know, tight end premium is becoming more and more popular. I'm all right with it. I don't really care either way. I think tight ends create their own value by having, there's just not a lot of tight ends that are good. So obviously if you have a good one, that creates its own value right there. And if the other people in the league don't see that, then just take advantage and make it your own advantage. But, you know, using that type of a league, probably starting between 10 and 12 players, you know, 2 running backs, 3 wide receivers, a couple flexes, a super flex, you know, a tight end, so forth and so on. That type of standard league with maybe 25 to 35, you know, total roster spots, 12-team league. Then in those cases, which is very, you know, sort of industry standard, whatever you want to call it, I have a very sort of specific strategy. And I think you do too, because I've seen you implement it to perfection in one league that I'm not even going to talk about. But, you know, right. But yeah, I mean, you left the draft. I was like, wait, you have all those players? You're going to be good. Wait, why do you have 521 first? It's like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, it was just outstanding. But ultimately, that's it. You want to trade back. You effectively want to trade back out of your first round pick. And honestly, you want to move back as few spots as possible and pick up as much capital as possible. I mean, that's as simple as it is. You know, there's examples of those trades and, but you know, we won't necessarily get into that because it does matter. Like, you know, if you have the 1.01, you can probably trade from the 1.01 in a super flex league where Mahomes is there to the 1.02 and get a 21 first. And you know what? That's probably not even crazy. Cause if you were trying to trade, you know, Mahomes for Kyler Murray, you'd probably ask for a 21. Like, that's not even a crazy. So that one spot has a great amount of value. Whereas if you're trying to trade from the 104 to the 105, like, you probably don't even get anything. Like, maybe, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Not very much unless someone sees a player there. So those little steps and plateaus, you have to recognize, and whether or not your opponents recognize them or not, you need to.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, it does matter where in the board or where in the first round your pick is. I mean, obviously a lot of that's going to be luck of the draw and just what happens. But you know, it's also what you do with those picks, right? I mean, you could have, you know, like the 107 and yeah, I mean, to move back to the 108, I mean, no one's probably going to do that, but then, so maybe you're looking at, all right, well, maybe I'll move to the, you know, early part of the second round. So maybe you're moving back, you know, 6, 7, 8 spots. You know, maybe you're not acquiring a first round pick, but you're acquiring maybe a second, maybe you're doing a late pick, another pick swap, or instead of a rookie pick, maybe you acquire a, you know, not, I want to say a mid round pick, but you know, like a little bit after mid round, or it's like, I guess it's, you know, you're looking at, you know, round 7, 8, 9, 10, something like that. But that's, if you're right, acquiring, you know, additional startup picks, then that's also giving you more ammunition to whether it's trade that pick back and acquire even more capital, or you have the flexibility to make the pick. You know, you could trade that one away for actually rookie capital. I mean, so it's, yeah, like you said, acquiring more assets, more value. And then, and essentially, if you can start that off right, and it's usually not hard. I mean, nowadays, I think more people are trying to move back out of the first, but, you know, if you're persistent, you could still get something done. And then from there, it's snowball effect, right? You get one little piece that you've, you know, gained, and then you're more or less reinvesting that into the next move back. And I, you know, I think in the recent startup that you're talking about, you know, you're just did that. You moved back and you took that pick, you moved that one back a little bit more and acquired some more picks. So you took one first round pick and you might have moved back maybe a round or two, but then now you're looking at, you know, several rookie picks, and you know, now, you know, your picks from rounds 3, 4, 5, and 6, where, you know, I think in most startup drafts, and this year is no exception, I mean, that's where all the, you know, if you can acquire a couple of picks in each of those rounds, I mean, you're so stoked. You know, you're looking at the board and, you know, all the values falling. People are going to be reaching for some players that maybe overperformed the season before. And, you know, and then you're looking at guys like, you know, Miles Sanders and Antonio Gibson, you know, in the, you know, fourth round, you know, you're just picking up guys like that. So yeah, I think it's the way to go if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And you pointed out, but you know, you said one thing that I thought was pretty interesting. You said a lot of people are sort of hip to, you know, this trade back thing, and it's a little harder to do. And you know what? You're right. Why? Because we play in leagues where, you know, everybody's, I go so far as to call them experts, or at least I think they're experts, but you know, a lot of expert leagues where these guys are like, it is, the competition is extremely strong. And I, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners also play in those leagues, but some of them don't. And then also some of them who do play in leagues without, you know, they're looking for fish all over the place, right? I mean, if you're going to play, look, I always said when I played poker, I want to play with the richest guys who are the dumbest guys, right? I want to play with rich, dumb people. That's the best poker table I could ever find, right? But, you know, so same thing with Dynasty Football. I mean, if you can play with some really great dudes who are dumb as a box of rocks and they want to play for a lot of money, rock on. Let's do this, you know? So a lot of our listeners are playing in sort of more casual leagues where they're putting it together with some redraft guys who they played with for years. And they're like, hey, let's get a dynasty league together. You know, and then, you know, they're listening to this. They're going to kill that league, you know? And so, yeah, it's harder to do the way that you trade in an expert league, man, you're getting a little less value. But I will say in any 12 team league, there's always, I feel like there's always at least a couple people who want to move around, and maybe you're not going to fleece somebody, you know, with a move back, you know, but you're definitely going to be able to still accrue value and move back. And like you said, even if you're not getting a first, even if you're getting seconds and a couple, you know, mid round picks, and let me go ahead and define mid round in the article. I'll lay this out in the article. Let's say you're playing a super flex dynasty league. Well, look, right now there's actually, you know, about 10 quarterbacks you'd like to have. Everybody else is a gigantic question mark. But generally speaking, look, there's 30 starters, of course, 32, of course, to be exact, but about 30 starters. Let's just parse that down to about 20 to 25 starting quarterbacks that you'd like to have. Quarterback one and two. Okay, great. So you have 20, let's just call it 25. With running backs, it's about the same number. There's 32 starting running backs. There's a couple of teams where there's not a starting running back that you'd even really want. I mean, you know, it's a bit ugly there. And there's a couple of teams where there's more than one. All right, so let's just call that 30. Wide receivers certainly gets deeper than that. If you look at wide receivers, there's at least 60 because there's generally about two per team. Some have three. Let's just call that a 75 total. If you're keeping track, you might want to write this down. But, you know, so 25 and 75, 25 quarterbacks, 75 wide receivers, that's 100 plus those 25, 30 running backs. Let's call that 125, 30. Now you've got tight ends, another 15. It's about 150 picks. Okay. That's about where you want to be. Well, 120 is 10 rounds. 150 is right in that 12th round, somewhere in there. Somewhere when you get out to the 12th round is when you're going to start to see things really get like dicey. And a lot of these, you know, drafts are 35 rounds or 25 or who knows what, right? So those are late round picks. Anything, you know, whether there's, you know, whether there's 45 rounds or 20 rounds, anything after 12 is starting to get a little late. And so the mid rounds that you're talking about are things that are inside of 10. And so, yeah, 10, 9, 8, 7, those are great picks because they're still high quality players. And when you're trading out of the first or out of the second, or out of the third even, you know, and moving back, sometimes guys look and be like, that's only a 10th round. I don't give a shit. You know, it's nobody there. And then meanwhile, you're grabbing, you know, your third or fourth quarterback where he only has one or two, you know, he's scrambling for quarterback, you know, and then you trade that quarterback the following season for, you know, King's ransom. And so you're just churning value. You're just gathering value. And what ends up happening is, yeah, the player that you would have drafted, you know, in round one or two is going to be better than the player you might have drafted in round, you know, three or four when you move back. But it's Davante Adams versus Terry McLaurin or something like that. And that's a difference, yes. But it's also a gigantic difference to have a quarterback starting in your super flex spot. And, you know, in your third and fourth flex spots, you're starting like, you know, legit high-end starters as opposed to, you know, putting in a, you know, a backup running back and hoping he scores or something like that. So the difference that you get from, or that you lose from moving down from, you know, Davante to McLaurin or whatever, that's an example, is way less than the advantage you're getting, you know, later in the draft. Plus you just also acquired, you know, the next year's draft capital. So, you know, it's like, what the hell? Your team looks so good on paper. It's incredible. But that's the key, is to stay within 150 picks, roughly, depending, you know, right in that ballpark. And, it, you know, think about it, 12 rounds. If you start 12 players, well, bingo, there you go. It's right in that ballpark. You're talking about drafting starters. And that happens in the first 10 to 12 rounds, maybe sometimes out to 15, you know, depending if rookies are in it or not. But you're getting my drift, I think.
Yep. Looking at a startup draft right now, I'm not in it. I'm just looking at the board. Yeah. And I mean, every year it's right there, right? You have about 150 picks before that cliff. And if you add in like rookie picks into the draft, then, you know, it's going to push it back, you know, maybe a couple rounds more just because yes. You're looking at maybe about 20, 24 rookie picks within that first 150. But yeah, I mean, it gets dicey every year, and you get to a certain point, you get to round 10, you look at the board and you're like, Mark Ingram is like I remember Mark Ingram was staring at me every 10th or 11th round of every startup draft. And I'm like, I don't want Mark Ingram. Like, but like, I think out of like the 20 times I saw him, I pressed the button on him literally once, like, and I regretted it immediately. But yeah, that's the territory you're getting into, right? An RB that you think you hope might score versus, yeah, I mean, I'm picking up, you know, guys like, you know, Chris Carson, Monty, you know, those guys are available, you know, kind of, you know, I guess closer to like round six, you know, seven, you know, depending on what type of format you're in. But I'd rather have those guys, you know, than, you know, ending up with a Mark Ingram at the tail end of his career and just hoping that he has some kind of, you know, miraculous, you know, season. Yeah, and like you're saying, I think talking about scarcity of positions, like especially quarterbacks and super flex, you know, there's only, yeah, like you said, maybe 10, if that, quarterbacks that you feel comfortable rolling out as like your QB1, and then the rest maybe up to, you know, 15, 18 quarterbacks, you know, if you're comfortable having as like your QB2 slot or, you know, just rolling it out in your super flex. But if you're not acquiring multiple picks in, you know, round 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 7, you're not going to be able to acquire QBs. I mean, where else are you going to pick them up? You know, I mean, you get to rounds 9, 10 and beyond, you're looking at, you know, the Darnolds, the Winstons, the Garoppolos, and, you know, I was, you know, I have several of these guys on a lot of my teams, and, you know, now looking at them, it's, you know, ugh, if I'm stuck with the startup draft getting these guys, because I wasn't drafting properly. I was trying to chase value by moving upwards. Yeah. Then you kind of, you know, limit your options as you get kind of where it gets, you know, dicey, and you want more options earlier.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's interesting too about taking those picks and, like, you know, you're trading out of the first and into the third or whatever, and you've got, you know, 21 first and, you know, whatever, that, you know, his third, his fifth, his seventh, you know, because of course, you know, what the hell, you're moving from the third round to the first round. You're taking my pick five, you're getting Alvin Kamara. Of course, you're going to have to pay me dearly for that pick, right? So you pay me all that. But then I sneak in and I say, you know, I basically just ask for your 13th round pick. And you're like, whatever, you know, throw that shit in there. But then what happens is when it's like the 12th or 13th round and everything is getting dicey, now that pick has just accrued value. It's more valuable now that it's on the clock because people see what the hell's going on the board and they're like, oh shit, if I don't pick here, you know, maybe the, you know, guy moved back, did this, whatever, he doesn't pick for two rounds, and it's like, oh my God, dude. So now you can leverage that pick for even more value that you would have never been able to sell it for. You know, like if you were like, instead give me a 21 second, he'd be like, no, I'll just give you the 13th, bro, up front. But now you can sell that 13th pick for a 21 second. And you're like, this is amazing. Like, so you just continue to churn value, and that's how it's done, you know, but by knowing where those cliffs are and understanding them is kind of what's most important. And so I, you know, I use that to my advantage every time.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It's, you know, I think you made actually a couple of good points is, yeah, I mean, knowing, you know, how far to move back, right, and kind of knowing your tiers, doing your homework. You know, I know people throw around tiers and do this. I mean, for me, when I do a big board, you know, I do positional tiers, but I also kind of have like the board tiered out in general, right, and you kind of know that, okay, you know, there's a couple of tight ends in this range, and then from there, you know, it's going to drop off for a couple of rounds and I'm not going to touch tight end, right? So, you know, either I get one now or I'm just going to have to just, you know, fade it all the way. But if you're not prepared to know when those drops are happening, you know, when the drop from like a Noah Fant to the Hunter Henry, right? I mean, there's a tier drop there, I think. I mean, it's close, but, you know, most drafts I see is, you know, most people want Noah Fant about a round earlier than Hunter Henry and nothing really in between them. And then from Hunter, you have like the Gesickis and the Goddards, and they're all kind of lumping that kind of tier together. But knowing when, if you're going to target tight end, all right, well, this is my last chance. I'll drop to round 8 and I need to just stay there. So preparation is key in that regard. And then the other thing is, you know, if I'm in round one and a lot of people, and like we were talking about, everyone's trying to move back and, you know, that's the whole name of the game. What I see a lot is, and it doesn't work, is, and I'm guilty of this all the time. I'm holding 108 and I'll say, oh, I want to move back to the early second only, right? I only want to move back a couple of spots, but I want something for it. Think about it. If you're playing with sharps, no one's going to pay you to move up four or five spots when they're probably doing tiers too. It right. only makes sense for them if the move is significant. So it's a round one to round three drop. So I'm moving back two rounds. Then you can start asking for, like you said, like a three, a five, and a seven. And I'll give you, you know, my one, and I'll give you a 10 or something back, or maybe not a 10, but a 12 or whatever. And you're moving something, you know, eight rounds up by moving about a couple rounds, and you gain another pick on top of that. But yeah, I think that's also key, is, you know, knowing that if you're going to move back, sometimes, you know, a little bit more of aggressive move back versus just trying to say, oh, I want to move back just a handful of spots, which not really going to work, versus, you know what? Yeah, I'll move back two rounds. You know, who wants to make this deal? Give me a first, and, you know, let's swap a couple of picks and give me, you know, maybe an additional pick or something late. But yeah, I think that's also key, is being somewhat aggressive in that move back to open up the market and open up the kind of options you have in, from the suitors.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you make a great point in terms of moving back. And it's funny because, like, I think of it too, like, you know, some guys will want to leave a startup draft with a team that like almost like it's a redraft league, whereas I don't care at all about that, which brings me to sort of my next point, which is I'm drafting in a dynasty league for value rather than drafting in a dynasty league to complete my roster, right? You know, and that's why I'm willing to trade away the pick that could be Alvin Kamara or Dalvin Cook in that first round, not because I don't want them on my team. I realize that having one of those players in general on your team makes your team more likely to win. I get that. I'm totally hip to that. So if you have to win year one, I don't know, maybe trading back isn't the best move. I get that. Like I see that. Although I've done it a couple times, and like you've done it too, where you've traded back, done that whole thing, this whole strategy of, you know, and I'm going to have Ryan McDowell on, you know, in a couple weeks. I'm not exactly sure which week, but that's pretty exciting. Little name drop there. Love Ryan. He's the godfather, the man. But, you know, he sort of coined that productive struggle, which is, I think, pretty similar to what you and I are talking about. However, I don't necessarily need to struggle too much. Sometimes I think I'm going to, and then I'm ended up in the Super Bowl in year one. You're like, and then I still have these first round picks next year. So I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, in a redraft league, you're drafting for fantasy points. That's it. You know, that year, fantasy point. I'm trying to maximize the amount of fantasy points in my starting lineup. That's it. Whereas in a dynasty league, that's not it. That is not what I'm doing. I'm drafting for maximum future value. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to pick the guy that's going to appreciate over time, that's going to be worth more in 6 minutes or 6 months or 6 years than he is today. And I'm looking to do that over and over again, so much so that my team is so much more valuable in terms of, you know, coins. You know, if I were to exchange them in, I have more value than any other team. And in doing so, I can then acquire, you know, Dalvin Cook when my team is ready to go, which you saw me do in a league this year, you know, where I spent, I think, three first-round picks for Alvin Kamara to make a Super Bowl run. Well, that obviously was a pretty good idea. The dude scored six touchdowns in whatever week it was. You know, that's the guy you want to go for to buoy a stretch run. But you don't want to do – you know, he doesn't do you any good if you're 7-9 or whatever, you know, 500 record, not making the playoffs and not winning shit and drafting, you know, in the middle. I mean, it just doesn't do any good for you. You either want to – you know, be going for it or, you know, gaining value until you are ready to win that thing. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it does. And it did. And it reminds me of a conversation you actually had with our buddy, Mike Liu, on your podcast, you know, several episodes ago, talking about, you know, contending and non-contending and, you know, what to do with, you know, teams that are in, you know, kind of outside that, maybe that top five or top six teams, you know, midseason. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you build a team, you draft a team to, I mean, in my mind, in a startup, to acquire or increase in value over the next 2 years, you know, 3 years maybe max, but really in a 2 year time frame. And then you're looking at, yeah, I want to gain assets for the future while building a nice core that's productive now. But what I do believe is they're going to be more productive in the next couple of years now, just going to continue to be better and better. And obviously when they're producing better on the field, they're increasing in value. And once you feel like you're in that top echelon of teams in your league, and then now referencing back to that episode is, you know, then you use that draft capital you've accumulated during those startup drafts and those trade backs, and you know, you've had that luxury now, right? Because maybe the startup draft was 2 years ago and you acquired some 21 picks, and I see you do this all the time where you'll get a 2021 first, and then come rookie draft time, you'll have three or four of those, and maybe your team's already stocked up. Like, you don't need to use all that. So you're going to say, you'll be on the clock and you'll say, hey, I'll trade this 108 for two of your 2022 first. And the guy's
right,
salivating at the mouth because he just wants to make a pick. He wants to pick Devontae Smith right now at 108 or whatever it is. And he's just like, oh, I'll do it. And you're like, okay. And you know, whatever it is, maybe the next season is not as, you know, highly prized as this year. So the guy's like, oh, I'll just sell those off now and worry about it later. And you're like, okay, fine. So now you have two dart throws and you just doubled up whatever you had there. And then come next year, now you can make a pick. You can trade that. You can actually take those two picks and now add one more on top and go get a Dalvin Cook. So yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. What we're talking about is you have flexibility. And then when you feel like you're ready to really make a run at it, you just dip in there and you're like, well, shoot, I have, you know, literally, and this is not even exaggerating, you have 8-9 picks in the rookie draft. You don't need 8-9 picks. I mean, your team's already, you know, pretty stocked. You know, maybe it's not fully stacked to the brim where you're like going to dominate, but yeah, you're pretty good. You don't need 9 rookie picks that year. So maybe you'll trade a couple, a consolidate, and get a stud RB, or, you know, maybe another quarterback to make a run at it. And, you know, then you trade another one away and you get more future assets and you just rinse and repeat every year, right? So then some of the guys get older and you're swapping those guys out with some of the new talent. So yeah, that's
exactly right. And like, so for me, you know, I think it's like, so I just did a draft. It was like 35 players and my running backs are, my RB1 is Ezekiel Elliott. My RB2, you saw this draft. My RB2 is Jeremy McNichols. Like, I literally don't have any running back. Now I do have picks 4, 5, like 13 and 17 in the upcoming 21 draft, because I, you know, those were also picks I could take. Now those are going to be either, you know, Najee Harris, Etienne, or Javonte, or whatever. I'm Jamar Jefferson, maybe. Who knows? I mean, I'm going to have a couple of opportunities to grab some running backs in the rookie draft, you know, even before this season starts. I really wouldn't normally go into a season with Jeremy McNichols as my RB2. But the point I'm making here is I didn't take any, like, he literally is my second best running back on the roster because it's a super deep league. And, you know, there's like, I think there's like 2 running backs, 3 wide receivers, 3 flex. There's like 6 flex. Like,
oh, man.
Because, yeah, because there's like 3 and then, you know, 3 more. There's no tight end position. So there's like 3 regular flex and then 3 tight end flexes.
Got it.
Where you can play running back or wide receiver. So like, it's super deep. So you can play like, I don't remember, it was like 8 or 9 wide receivers if you wanted to. And it's PPR, tiered PPR. So tight ends are more valuable, but those wide receivers are still valuable. And I am loaded at receiver. Now, that also speaks to my strategy, because here's the thing. You mentioned a couple of backs, like, you know, Mark Ingram. I'd rather have Carson or Monty or whatever. I don't want any of those guys, you know, because wherever Carson and Monty and, you know, Ingram, wherever those guys are going, I will bet you that there is a wide receiver available at that pick who will be relevant in 3 years when those guys are gone. Like, because Carson's not going to be, I mean, maybe he will, but you look at the track record, like Todd Gurley, David Johnson, Lev Bell, all those guys are like 28, 29. Todd Gurley's like 26. Like these guys are like, were studs. They were the top three. They were probably the top six picks in a startup draft like 3 years ago. They're dead. They're like not even relevant. They're dead. And that's going to happen to all the running backs all the time. It's not, they're not special cases. This is what they, what happens where wide receivers, like right now, CeeDee Lamb, or you pick the running back in this class, you know, and Justin Jefferson, or you pick the running back in their class, who's going to be more valuable? Now, it doesn't matter yet, but in 8 years, it's those other guys are going to be gone. They're not even going to be in the league, the running backs, but Jefferson and Lamb will still be, they'll be like 29 years old. They'll be like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and Davante Adams right now. Like, you're fine with those guys. Like, those are stable assets. You can draft those guys, and you can draft later guys like Ayuk or Higgins or whoever is that, you know, Chark, LaViska Shenault. I'm going to take the wide receivers the whole way through and just fade those running backs. The only reason I need running backs, you know, I mean, you want to be trading those running backs. You know, I mean, obviously on any team that dominates, you generally look and you're like, oh, dude, look, I have Kamara, Barkley, and Cook or whatever. Of course you do. Yeah, you need those to win. I'm not disagreeing with that. But if you draft all those guys and you don't have any depth at wide receiver, you A, may not win, because even though you have those guys, your team isn't complete. But your team is going to be probably shit in like 3 years, like, you know, unless you properly trade them. But I would always just rather load that up with wide receivers, things that are going to be worthwhile for a long period of time, and then just try and nab running backs in the draft. Or trade, you know, rookie picks for stud backs, you know. So for me, it's that simple. Like when my team is like knocking on the door, I'll make a purchase and I'll purchase a running back. Yep. But I don't want those running backs sitting on my roster, because they're just like Todd Gurley and David Johnson and Lev Bell, all these here today, gone tomorrow. And one of the reasons that they're volatile is, yes, the position is more demanding physically, whereas you can kind of, you know, maybe get by with a little guile as a wide receiver, where you certainly ain't getting by with that as a running back. You need some pop, some juice as a running back. But one other thing that I say all the time, I think I've said it on this pod a few times, if not once, is, it, you know, okay, CeeDee Lamb went to Dallas. Amari Cooper was still a stud. Justin Jefferson went to Minnesota. Thielen had a great year, and Jefferson was a legend. There's room for more than one receiver. But in running backs, Kerryon Johnson was murdered by DeAndre Swift. Now, if those were wide receivers, you'd be like, oh, yeah, the Kerryon and Swift, they're both good. But they're not. I mean, they are, but it doesn't matter how good Kerryon is or isn't. If he doesn't play, can't score points. And that's what happens to running backs. They get eviscerated by younger, better talent, and then they're gone. But wide receivers can hold on. Marvin Jones, like, think about how valuable Marvin Jones has been. He's played with Kenny Galladay, and really, if he was a running back, he would have had a 2-year career.
Yeah, it's so true. Marvin Jones is such a great example. Like last season, I was willing to give up a second to acquire Marvin Jones, you know, just to get him as my, you know, my flex, you know, get him my flex. I'll pay, you know, a second round rookie pick, just to get on my team. And then you tell me, you know, give me a second for, you know, somebody like a running back. And I'd probably say, no, I don't want to do that, or it's not enough, or whatever it is. But yeah, I think wide receivers hold their value much longer, like you said. And that's something I've started to learn more and more than what I've played is, you know, you get enamored and yeah, you know that you can't win a league without at least one stud running back, if not, you know, a couple, to, you know, really kind of carry you the way. But yeah, it's a fickle window. And, you know, if you're not ready to roll, what's the point of having a Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley? And it's going to take you, you know, at least a couple of seasons to get, you know, get up and running and maybe start looking at making a run, when you can just move those guys now, get more assets that you can actually grow with. And then when you're ready to, you know, ready to rock, then you know, you have that additional asset to go and reacquire the new hot item, right? I mean, a couple of years ago, it was, you know, you know, Barkley, and now, you know, you can, you know, everybody wants, you know, Jonathan Taylor, right? In a couple of years, it's going to be the next guy. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right in terms of, you know, how you want to construct your roster. I mean, for me personally, looking at the way the QB landscape has been going, and I've always been a big proponent of QB, especially the way format I play is like 6-point touchdown, passing touchdowns. I like having a really good QB versus a really good running back, right? I can help build around a QB, get some good receivers, you know, give me a T. Higgins, give me Ayuk. And those are the kind of guys I'm building around now, the receivers like, Higgins and Ayuk, guys like that. Courtin Sutton is another guy that I like a lot.
Yeah, I'm with you on Sutton too. I mean, I thought he was ready to break out, and you know, we'll see if Denver gets a quarterback to throw it to him. But yeah, those are my two cents, man. And you know, it's not the only way. I wouldn't go out here and say, hey, look, this is the only way to build a team, because it's 100% not. That I will also tell you, because I've played with guys who play it the complete opposite, and they're not wrong. They're literally not wrong. It's just, if you ask me how do I be consistently competitive for the longest period of time, which is kind of what Dynasty is, that's it. You know, you just want to, and then don't be afraid to make trades, to keep it going. You know, like you said, I mean, I can tell you a league where I had, I was the defending champ, and I had the 102 and the 106. And that was the Saquon draft. And it was, I wanted, you know, Geis really bad. Geis is one of my favorite players. You know this. I mean, you know, so coming out, he was even more. I mean, obviously now it's easy to say, well, what's so good about Geis? Well, coming out, he was like, I mean, oh, he was such a fun prospect, like incredible fun prospect, really had the upside. I wanted to draft Darius Geis, but I traded that 1-2 and the 1-6 for, I want to say it was 2 firsts the next year, and then like maybe the later year. But I really was trying to position for this 2020 class. I really was, you know, I knew, or the 2019 and 2020 class, like, you know, cause the 2019 or the 2020 class, excuse me. Yeah. This past year, you know, we knew all these running backs were coming out. I was like, that's a great class to be in. I have no problem with that. My team did win the title that year in that league, but I traded the 1-2, the 1-6, for future first. Plus I also got like a second that year. So I'm like, didn't really go that far down. I don't remember who I took with that second. I'd have to look, but you know, my arch nemesis in that league drafted Darius Geis and Royce Freeman with those two picks. Oof. And right. And they weren't bad picks at the time. I was like, he's set, man. He's got two stud running backs coming in.
Yeah.
And one busted out and the other one, you know, obviously is Darius Geis, who's just a, you know, an enigma at this point. But even that whole class, it was Kerryon Johnson, Ronald Jones, Sony Michel. Obviously, if you took, you know, Chubb and Barkley, you were good. But, you know, the point I guess I'm making too is with these picks, there's no sure thing. It's not like I was I liked Royce Freeman okay. I loved Geis. Michel was pretty cool. I loved Chubb. Obviously, everybody loved Barkley, but like, I didn't like Ronald Jones, but all that didn't matter. It's like, no matter who you liked, it was kind of like, you know, you just missed. And I didn't know that. I'm not saying I knew that. I actually was really disappointed at the time, but I had the sort of the courage to know my roster and to continue to put value in that sort of iron bank of future first, which served me well. Cause I think on that particular team, I think I have, it's kind of ridiculous, I have Barkley, Kamara, Cook, but I also have, Dobbins, Akers, and JT, you know, right? Because I kept pushing and pushing forward, and then all of a sudden I had these three firsts in this awesome draft, and I was like, click, click, click. You know, it was just like, you know, boom. I think it's Akers, Akers, Dobbins, and JT. It's just like, holy smokes. So, you know, it took the patience to get there, and sometimes it, like, that's where it's just value. You know, if you can get that right deal, it works for you, and understanding your team. Honestly, if I didn't have, you know, some stud running backs, I think I had Dalvin. I don't think I had I don't think I had Saquon at the time. I traded for him when he was hurt, but I think I had Gurley. I did. I had Gurley and Kamara and Cook. And it was like, I don't need a running back. Why am I, you know, I'm going to draft Geis. He's going to sit on the bench. I might as well, you know, make that type of trade. And these are the types of things that you have to be ready to do based off of what your roster looks like.
Yep. No, I agree. It really matters.
Yep.
Roster construction and I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And we're going to have a roster construction talk with Reedy. I know he wanted to come back and do a redraft roster construction, and I forgot who the heck he wanted to have as my dynasty guy on that one, but we're definitely going to do that. That's going to be a lot of fun. But, you know, one thing I think, you know, that you'd mentioned was the anatomy series. And now I might as well touch on that just briefly, but you know, one thing that, you know, with the anatomy of a running back or wide receiver, tight end or quarterback, yeah, I got a, you know, you did send me a couple of those DMs where dudes are like, I'm building my entire, you know, thing off this. And it's like, it's very flattering. I would say don't build anything off of any single thing. You know, even though I think it's hugely valuable, and I was looking for, you know, some really highlighting information about what these high level prospects look like, you still want to use all the data that you have, every bit, every piece, and, you know, and sort of be a supercomputer that takes in as much of that data as possible and try to process it with the best decisions you can make, and never be sure. I wrote this down the other day. I was like, be ready to be wrong, right? Like, be ready to be wrong. Like, which means like, I'll give you an example. You'll like this one, Chalk. Henry Ruggs right now. Like, I was fading Henry Ruggs. I didn't draft him anywhere. I have zero Henry Ruggs, like literally not a single share anywhere in any team at all. Orphans nowhere. I have no Henry Ruggs. He was a third round prospect. I, you know me, I love Darnell Mooney. Like why would I draft Ruggs when I could have had Mooney? I said that, you know, literally, before the draft. I mean, this was the way I felt. So I have zero Ruggs. Okay. I'm ready to be wrong. I'm literally now leaning back into, is Ruggs a buy low? Because if he is a great player, now all the people who drafted him are ready to cut bait. You may be able to get him as a throw in. You know, I will lean back into that uncertainty because I don't know that he's not good. I just bet he wasn't good. I don't know. I don't know shit. And neither do you or anybody else or, you know, anybody listening. We think we know, and you know, you could say, no, he sucks for sure. And you might be right, but you still didn't know when you said it. You know, it's like, you know, he might actually turn out. And so those are the types of things. Be ready to be wrong and try and lean into that.
Yeah. Spider-Man on the Ruggs thing, first of all. But yeah, I look at it more. But yeah, I mean, one thing I'm always doing now is looking at the guys. Whether I like them or not, right? Even if I like somebody, it's be ready to be wrong. And, you know, is this guy's peaking in value right now, or is perceived value seems very high, and I like him a lot. I mean, is he going to sustain this, or is he going to meet that expectation? I think just an example I've been kind of going through right now is like Jalen Hurts. Like, I like Jalen Hurts. I liked him as a prospect. I thought he was intriguing. He is Konami. And I think he has, you know, potential, but the way he's being valued and perceived right now, it's pretty high. And I'm ready to be wrong that, you know what, maybe he's not going to be as good as, you know, we think he is or we hope he's going to be. So if I can trade him at a very high point and get maximum value at what I think right now, I'll be ready to be wrong. Like maybe he isn't as good as I thought. So I'll be able to move him there. I mean, that's kind of a reverse example. Or the other way, right?
But like it's a good one.
Yeah, or the Henry Ruggs example, yeah. I've actually been thinking about Henry Ruggs myself. Like, I really didn't like him at all, but a lot of people that are you know, smart or considered smart, they like them. So maybe they're right and I'm wrong. And, hey, look, like, you know, the name of the game is if you can get 50% right, you're doing okay. And anything above that, I mean, you're probably making some money. But yeah, I mean, you know, looking at that, maybe there is an acquisition point for someone like Ruggs or, you know, guys that you weren't fans of. I mean, I think Montgomery was an example of last year. you know, I didn't get any of them because I still didn't like them. But but yeah, it was be ready to be wrong. And I kind of had a feeling with Cohen being out that, yeah, there's a possibility that Monty will be better than I think, or I advertise all of my timeline. And you know, just got to be ready to be wrong. I think that's a great one.
Well, it's funny you brought up Monty, because I swear to God, if you hadn't mentioned it and stopped talking, I was going to say, just like me and you with Monty and Sanders, right?
Yeah.
You know, another guest I'm going to have on in the coming weeks now is Angelo. And, you know, me, you, and Angelo, I mean, obviously we teamed up on him. We were both Team Sanders. He was Team Monty. But, you know, we weren't thinking this guy's an idiot. We were thinking, you know, Angelo, we were thinking, I think he's wrong. So we're going to argue the point, and actually by arguing, you tend to find out more about your position as well as the other person's position, and you go, huh, and you start to think about it. If you're not considering that you might be wrong, you're going to miss all of your opportunities to either, you know, get off a guy that you were wrong about, or get on a guy that you were, you know, wrong about the other way. And you know, that can cost you, you know, Devontae Parker being ready for his breakout, like, you know, understanding that, hey man, this was a high, you know, high caliber player. And then when he starts to break out, if you're just like, no, he still sucks. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I got Devontae Parker so late in so many drafts, you know, because people had given up on him. And it's like, even after he started to break out, people were like, eh, whatever, he still sucks. And it's like, I don't know. Like, does he? I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I'm willing to see at cost. Why not? Why wouldn't I? Like, I don't, you know, there's so many guys who will say things like, dude, that guy's burned me before. No, not that guy. Never again. It's like, well, I mean, why? You know, it's, yeah, like, I don't care what he's done. I do care what he's done in the past, but I only really care what's going to happen tomorrow. Like, that's it. And if he's going to provide me value at cost, then what's the problem? You know?
Yeah. I mean, Stephon Diggs, right? I mean, I know there's people that said, oh, I don't want Stephon Diggs after all those Viking years. No, he's a disappointment. He's going to Buffalo, and no way. And, you know, if you weren't ready that, you know, the possibility that, no, he actually might be really good in Buffalo, you missed it. And, you know,
I missed it. Yeah, I did. You were right. I was wrong. Like, that was certainly something where I never thought Diggs was bad. Diggs was one of my favorite players. As a matter of fact, you go back to the Stephon Diggs, David Johnson draft. Those were my two favorite, like, you know, players in that draft, because they were drafted outside the, you know, day one, day two, but they just looked like can't miss prospects. I loved those two dudes. And, you know, I remember wanting the Patriots to draft both of them because they, you know, could have, you know, I mean, anybody could have, you know, the whole league passed on them too many times. So, and, you know, so those were great players, but, you know, you're right. I was wrong about that circumstance and all the rest of it. If I could have acquired him, I would have, but I wasn't paying enough because I was wrong. And you're absolutely right. So I love that. You know, speaking of being wrong, we certainly weren't wrong when we brought on some new members. I got to give you the chance to tell the people. I am so excited. One of my past guests, Chris Robin, who you guys might remember, Detroit Beastie. He's such a good dude. I mean, I actually hadn't talked to him. I'd only known him on Twitter before that interaction, and having him on the pod was like a breath of fresh air. I mean, he was so prepared. He was so like energetic and articulate and like knowledgeable and fun and engaging and kind and generous. Like, I was like, dude, this, and the work he put in just to be on my show was like overwhelming. And he knew his DFS stuff. We did touch on his DFS work. He sort of admits what he doesn't know. Well, lo and behold, Chris Robin, the DFS master, Detroit Beastie, is on our team at the Undroppables. I am so thrilled. You know, there's some guys I've brought on and sort of influenced onto this team. And, you know, he's right there at the top, man. I mean, I am so glad to be working with this guy. And maybe you can speak to him and, of course, introduce one other person that we brought in that's super exciting as well.
Yeah, Beastie has been a great addition. I'm so excited to have him join us in covering the DFS side of things. Yeah, he came highly recommended by yourself, you know, among some others. And, you know, when I one term and I spoke with them, I mean, this guy came in suit and tie to the Zoom interview just to, you know, really make a really good impression on us. And, you know, really excited about Chris. Also really excited about adding IDP Flea, the Fleaster. He'll be covering IDP for us. You know, adding a whole new wrinkle to what we've been doing and expanding our scope and format, formats that we cover. So Flea is another great addition. So I'm really excited about Flea. And just a couple other shout outs. Michael Duncan, you know, he's actually joined us, actually producer for your podcast now. So yeah, a shout out to Michael and Don Mega, who is now, you know, producing, you know, some of our video content, our hype videos, and really building out our YouTube with Tommy. So yeah, I mean, real big shout out to all those guys adding to our team. And, you know, I feel like we have a full squad now, you know, the all 22. And I feel like this year, you know, we're really primed for, you know, a great run.
Yeah, man, you said it. I mean, you know, I was talking some shit about Michael because he's like, you know, when we talked to him, he was like, I'll just do your pod, and that's, you know, that's it. I don't want to do too much more. And I, you know, almost as, you know, he gave me the impression he didn't know as much, and, you know, just kind of played it coy and cool. And then the dude is like, I mean, he is legit. I'm going to have him on the show very soon. I mean, like, he's very good at this stuff. He knows his stuff. He's great on Twitter. You know, he's great in the group chats, really, you know, has a lot to offer. Don Mega is amazing. Like, I had interacted with him. I didn't know he was this skilled in terms of, you know, what he can provide for us on the YouTube channel, which is kind of coming together now. We really needed help there because, you know, if you have me do it, it's basically just, you know, I'm joking. We're in trouble if I'm in charge of that shit. But, you know, Tommy, obviously now with him, really has the help he needs. And, you know, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, to have the YouTube page kind of taken off with some, like, legit, you know, information there and also just fun stuff. Like, it's fun as hell, you know, with that page, what's going on. And, you know, and we're going to go from there, right? So we're going to expand, you know, past that. You know, so yeah, I couldn't be more excited. Michael's fantastic. You know, IDP, obviously just having some IDP content, you know, we're not going to say that we're the leader in IDP because we, you know, brought on one person, but we're going to go there. I mean, you know, what's interesting about that too, is that actually Detroit Beastie's another IDP guy. So, you know, having those two guys sort of work together, sort of two new guys coming on, and it's just amazing. So we are growing, and these guys are like legit, you know, high quality people who are going to bring content. So, you know, if you're, you know, whatever you're looking for, whether it's IDP, DFS, I even just tweeted today about DFS hockey. You know, Beastie is a hell of a DFS hockey player and has content on that. So if you're jonesing for some winning some money here, just follow at Detroit Beastie and over at the Undroppables and start making some money on hockey. You don't even need to know anything about hockey. Just do whatever the hell he says and you'll make money.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he was telling us. I mean, he has nice formula down after all the years he's put in. I mean, I think he's put in almost a decade into DFS. Yeah. So I'm excited to, make some money with Beastie myself, man. Just throw a little bit of cash in. You know, screw all the stock shit, man. I'm going to go with something that I know, which is just fantasy football.
That's awesome. And, you know, I mean, and so we have all that going on at the same time, you know, obviously, term, you've heard me mention it so many times. The Unscripted Pod should be back. I think they're recording this week, if not next week. I think they're jonesing to get back on the mic. You know, the Super Bowl special last year, we kind of had them out there, but the Unscripted Pod is great. It's a great source for, you know, dynasty talk, but also like just football talk. These guys really break down the comings and goings of the league and put it to actionable information. I miss their pod because it helps me get, you know, sort of my head on straight with what the hell's going on in the league. Like, they're really, you know, ear to the ground. They're really good. The Unmatched Pod is a lot of fun. Obviously Dave Marchand doing that, which is, you know, I'm sure we'll be back. I think he did his final show for the Super Bowl, which was a lot of fun. Tommy Moe with his podcast, which is the 2-on-1 fantasy network that he had, which is basically now part of the Undroppables network. But Tommy's 2-on-1 show, they've been doing a lot of unsung heroes. And unsung heroes is kind of that offensive line talk, defensive line talk, a lot of, line talk. And I will tell you, Brad Wire joins him there. So you got Tommy and Brad, as well as others. Dukes shows up on there, I think, sometimes, and some of the other other guys. But, if we just go to Brad Wire and his offensive line breakdowns and unsung heroes, it sounds like a bunch of nonsense. Oh, what the hell do I need to know about offensive line? Well, how about the Kansas City-Tampa Bay Super Bowl? If that doesn't show you everything that you need to know about why line play matters. Now, that's a glaring one. That one was clear. But as it turned out, we probably should have been more actionable on that information, because the Tampa Bay front was dope. Kansas City's offensive line, not dope. And it was the difference in the game. And so when you talk about why we have offensive line rankings, why we invest so much of our time and energy talking about it and bring it to the forefront, it's because it matters. It doesn't, you're not going to draft a tackle in your dynasty draft, and you're probably not going to change who you draft based on offensive line, maybe a little, but week to week, matchups, all these things, that's where you win on the margins. And having dudes who know what the hell they're talking about, like Brad Wire, Tommy, et cetera, it really is going to help you become a better player. And that's all found at one spot, right here at the Undroppables. And, that, speaking of that Kansas City, Tampa, game, we should probably get to that, eh, Chuck?
Yeah, the greatest game in history.
I mean, kinda.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at just the, I mean, just put it in perspective. I mean, Tom Brady's career. I mean, I'm just an instant stan of Tom Brady now. Finally appreciating his greatness. But yeah, I mean, just the game itself. Watching a team actually stop that Chiefs juggernaut offense, like actually stopping them. In a prime time, I mean, the biggest game of all games. And then Tom, I mean, just rising to the occasion. People are hating, he didn't win the game, the defense did. I mean, he made the plays, though. I mean, he made the throws, and the guys made the catches, and that's what it comes down to. I don't know if many people know, but yeah, I'm a Tampa fan. I'm not a bandwagon guy. I've been a Tampa fan through many, many years, a couple of decades of terror and torment. We did have another Super Bowl victory against the Raiders, but it's been quite some time, and it was great to see that. I enjoyed the game. I don't think most people probably did from a casual standpoint, but great defense, and just kind of tying it back to IDP. I know Flea had mentioned this on his timeline, that Devin White is the 101 in IDP now formats in terms of defensive players, and that put a smile on my face just to see that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I play in a little bit of IDP here and there. I play one. I think I've mentioned on the pod that 32 team league that I should have won. I didn't win it. I did make it to the semifinals, and I'm a little bit hurt. It took the highest scoring week in the league history so far to beat me in semis. So, I'm not bitter, though. I mean, or am I? Maybe I am bitter. Sound pretty bitter. But anyway, I'm joking. But IDP is a lot of fun once you start to get into it a little bit. It's a lot for me. So just to keep track of it, it's not that easy, but it's a lot of fun. But, Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, by the way, did you see the throw he made where he was like tripped and he was like upside down, like almost he was literally flying through the air and like threw it somehow, but he was on the 30. Like it wasn't like he pitched it into the end zone. He was on the 30. Like that's a pretty decent throw for like a regular human. Not an NFL quarterback, I know, but like if you're standing on the 30 and you're like, you try to zip it to the end zone, let me tell you, it's a for real throw. He was airborne, falling. I mean, that throw, and he hits his player in the face mask. I think it was Darrell Williams. Right? Like, I was like,
yeah,
that was the greatest play I've ever seen. And if he catches that football, it's the, I think it's the greatest NFL throw I have ever seen.
Yeah, no, that throw was amazing. I mean, yeah, he was parallel with the ground and somehow still has the perfect motion. Like physically, like
how is that possible?
Like physically, like your shoulder, like your rotator, like how is that possible? Yeah, and then yeah, that throw 30 yards, like I mean more than 30 yards, right? He was on the 30, and then yeah, so you know 32 yards or so, 30, you know whatever, and yeah, I mean on the money, on the literally on the nose, just ridiculous.
It made no sense. I literally still can't figure it out. Like, I hope all our listeners, like, especially I know our listener, like, I see the demographics. You guys are young. Go out in the backyard, you know, and literally try and do that. Like, jump in the air, parallel to the ground, and throw the football. You won't be able to hit shit. You're not going to hit anything. You're not going to throw it at, you know, it's going to be a comedy. It's not even a thing. And he did it in the Super Bowl and put it on the fucking dot. Like it doesn't even, I don't even know how to process that throw. It was absolutely out of control. You know, so Mahomes was outstanding really in my book. I mean, you know, I thought the coaching was pretty bad. I mean, obviously they were dealing with, you know, I think there was a distraction with Andy Reid's kid, and I don't know. There was just a lot there, you know, losing the offensive tackle. They weren't game planning well. It's really kind of an ugly game for them. I mean, I said it on the pod. I was like, you know, Kansas City scores 30 every game and they didn't even score a touchdown. So, you know, you can say what you will about like Tampa's D. They played outstanding. I said that on the pod too. I said it's very possible that the Tampa defense is the unit that wins the game in this game. And it sure was, but I thought Kansas City left a lot on the field, you know, game management, time management, obviously a couple picks, penalties, you know, it's just, there was a lot of culmination. And then Brady was perfect, you know, didn't make a mistake. You know, basically was perfect. You know, I mean, he was 21 to 29, I think, but you know, just did everything he needed to do to win the game. Most of his stuff came in the first half. So once they were up in the second half, yeah, Brady wasn't going to be chucking it all over the place, but he was dynamite in the first half when they got their, I think it was 21-3 or whatever, 21-6 lead. So, 21-6. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he was that good and they deserved to win. It was a lot of fun being a Pats fan to watch, you know, Tom at 43 go hoist that trophy with Gronk and that team's kind of cool. I mean, Mike Evans, Godwin, Antonio Brown won a Super Bowl. Like, this is just some crazy shit was happening there.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, for, you know, somewhat of an uneventful game, it was, you know, some crazy stuff happened, the Mahomes play, and, you know, just, I mean, and then, you know, seeing playoff Lenny come alive, I mean, so awesome to see Lenny and, yeah, some of the nuanced parts of the game, you know, the defense, the offensive line, Kansas City offensive line, like you mentioned. Yeah, I mean, you know, Brady had a perfect game, but, you know, he had that interception that got called back. I, you know, he kind of lucked out on that one.
Sure, that's true.
You know, but yeah, I mean, you know, overall good game. And
I think that one hit his player first, though, or something like that, didn't it? Wasn't it like tipped or
something?
Yeah,
some shit? I think it was a tip, yeah.
But in any event, you know, you make a good point, and we're going to be talking about it going forward, is Leonard Fournette. He looked really good. I mean, he, you know, pretty soon we're going to, you know, undrafted pod is going to be talking a little bit about these free agents and, you know, where they're going to go, and, you know, pay attention, because I think Fournette could have a role wherever he ends up. I don't know if it's going to be in Tampa. You're a Tampa fan. I know that you're kind of a little bit connected to this. What the hell do you think? Do you think Fournette, I can't get a read on what the hell they're going to do with Leonard Fournette is what I'm asking.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be too expensive, to be honest. Right. Like, I don't know the type of cap situation off the top of my head, but he's going to be too expensive for them. I mean, you know, Godwin's a free agent. Right. I mean, I think, you know, maybe it's Godwin. I mean, you know, Antonio Brown is a free agent. you know, in terms of the running game, and we still have Rojo under contract. You know, Keyshawn Vaughn obviously didn't do much, but, you know, he's a cheap option. And knowing Arians, you know, I know he likes the vets and stuff, but, you know, I mean, Rojo was, you know, he was okay. I mean, his service, but he did pretty well. I mean, first part of the season, I think he just missed 1,000 yards. And, you know, Fournette doesn't seem like he's going to stick in Tampa just because of cost and the market. Although I would love to see him back. I don't see it. I think he earned himself at least a part of a, at least a solid role, right, in a backfield.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
so.
At least a 1B, if not a 1A in a backfield. So,
well, I thank you for coming on. I think we're probably going to cook it here. We had some technical difficulties on this damn pod. If you didn't hear it from your chair here, you know, Mr. Customer, then that's great, because we were scrambling with some internet connections, some other stuff. So, you know, we struggled through this one. Hopefully it sounded good, man. You know, because I thought we did a great job, at least you know, laying out the dynasty startup strategy and things like that. I had a lot of fun with you. I love you, brother. You're the man, and you know, I'm just so happy that we're doing this together.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. Like, you know, it's been great, man. Catching up, talking football, talking strategy, and yeah. You know, of course, when we get together, it's going to be a fun night behind the scenes too. So, no, good times, yeah. Good memories, and yeah, we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely. So, I got to say, on behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of Nick Chalk, you can find him at 101 Chalk. You know, obviously, just follow us at the Undroppables. But on behalf of everybody at the Undroppables, on behalf of Michael and everybody, Mathic, we've got some exciting stuff coming next week too. Mathic and Michael are going to be doing some player interviews. We got some players we're going to be you know, showcasing on the show. So that's really exciting. So look forward to that. But on behalf of all of us here at Undrafted and at the Undroppables, I'm out. Thank you so much. Later on.